Welcome to this week's episode of Electric Podcast. I'm Fred Lambert, and I'm joined by Seth Wenchow. How's it going, Seth?
I'm good, Fred.
Cool. All right, this week was a little bit of slower weeks for news and the EV world, but we still have a few cool things to talk about, starting with a bunch of Tesla software update that came out this week. The Sentry mode and the Dog mode, so Elon actually said that those were coming this week, and sure enough, they are coming this week, but not for everyone.
I didn't get it.
It's going to be Model 3 at first, and as you guys know, the rollout is always very gradual, so don't hold your breath to get until you get the new mode. And unfortunately, it's only going to be people with the 2.5 and up hardware, autopilot hardware. So that's another bummer, because if you have 2.0, it's not happening. Though, keep in mind that if you have 2.0, eventually you're going to be upgraded to the new hardware 3.0. And at that point, I assume that you're going to be able to have those updates. That's the speculation. And although that still requires you to buy the full self-driving package. So it's not like it's going to be free or anything. Unless you already have it, but still, it's not free. And Sentry mode is a kind of, it's a big upgrade on top of the dash cam feature, if you will, the Tesla cam that Tesla released last summer. It's built on that, and it's built to prevent the break-ins that we've been reporting on that in the past few weeks now, that for months now, Tesla owners have been reporting a kind of an alarming numbers of break-in that make us think that some thieves are actually targeting Tesla vehicles for break-ins. Because they don't have really an alarm system that works for broken windows. Sentry mode apparently do work for breaking windows, and it works using the autopilot cameras on the outside. And the way Tesla describes it now that they released, because they've been talking about using music and everything, but now we know exactly what it does. And what it does is it has some kind of two different level of alarms. The first one is, when you have, first of all, you have the Sentry mode. When you park and the Sentry mode is activated, it's in standby. It's in standby and it's always watching. So the autopilot camera is always watching. So that brings an interesting point. I'd like to know the phantom drain on that autopilot always on system. I don't think it's going to be that big of a deal, but I'd like to get some data on that.
Also, like the amount of data that's required if it's recording.
Well, it's not going to do anything unless it detects a threat in terms of the recording. So that brings us to the first level of alert, which is called a minimal threat. So if it detects a minimal threat, and the example that Tesla give is such as someone leaning on a car. Right? So that's apparently a minimal threat. So if the Sentry mode detects that, all it does is the screen's going to open up. Like I said, it's only on the Model 3 right now, so the big center screen, there was the one. And we got a first look from some users, and basically the screens looks like the AI from Space Odyssey.
HAL 9000.
HAL 9000, like the big red dot that's throughout the spaceship and everything. So the red dot is the main screen, and it also, in bold character, it says recording, and you see it's recording. It says protected by Tesla and Sentry activated. So it looks menacing, if you will. But that's all it does, really. It doesn't do anything. So if you're sort of leaning against the car looking through the window, then that thing pops up. So maybe it scares someone.
It's definitely an improvement.
It's something. It's not nothing. It's something. But then where things get interesting is there's another level. And that other level is a severe threat is detected. And the example that Tesla gives is such as someone breaking a window. Apparently, you don't need to go as far as breaking a window. Some people got it activated just by trying to open the doors when it's locked. So I think it's not clear exactly what they would consider a severe threat, but I think it's not as, you don't need to go as far as breaking a window. But without any movement sensor inside the car, with just the visual computer vision of Tesla's autopilot cameras, they are actually able to detect if a window is broken now. So that's also in itself a great improvement. And what it's going to do then is the screen's going to flash now. And it's not just going to be the red dot of HAL 9000, but the screen's going to flash, and they're going to blast some music.
Some classical music.
Yeah, it's classical music too. Some harmonious kind of music that plays. And so that serves basically as a more of a regular alarm system that's supposed to scare the thieves, the potential thieves. But that also sends is it for this one? Is it for the minimal threat?
By the way,
with the notification system.
I included what it sounds like, the Sentry Mode alarm. At the bottom of the post, there's like a little YouTube I added. It actually sounds like organ music. It's kind of weird.
There's two different that they're using right now. They're using two different ones. But yeah, I'm looking which level of alert they're actually sending a notification to.
I would imagine they definitely send an alert if.
Yeah, it's the alarm. So the alarm is the second level. So they are sending a notification to the app. So I think that's the biggest feature of Sentry Mode in my opinion, because plenty of cars have alarm systems. So but. It's still a big deal that they introduced the alarm because Tesla didn't have one and now there's one. And doing that, on braking inside the vehicle in a window. So doing that should deter some thieves. But there are plenty of thieves that are willing to just it's a smash and grab operation basically that we've been seeing on the braking some Tesla. So plenty of thieves are willing to do that on a car with an alarm system.
Yeah, but, and if they're smart. And they follow the Tesla blogs. They can grab the USB stick out, which with the
that's a good point too, because Tesla records those when it detects those threats. So then you can use that to find the thieves. But if they grab the USB on which the data is uploaded, that doesn't happen. But I think the biggest factor that they deter the thieves is if they know that as soon as they do something to the car and the alarm starts, the owner gets a notification. And generally, an owner is like pretty close to their car when it's parked. I mean, there's some situation that's not the case for sure. But if someone just like runs out fast enough and you can, maybe you're not going to catch him in the car, but you catch him like running away or something like that, then that's not a situation you necessarily want to be in, like depending on who the owner is. And of course, you shouldn't try to confront the thief. I'm not recommending that. You should always call the police. But I'm saying that if I put myself in the mindset of a thief, I'd be much more nervous about going after a Tesla vehicle if I know that the owner is going to be notified as soon as I touch that car.
You know, and I wonder now that, I mean, I'm sure some people don't care about this, but now that this Sentry Mode records data to a USB stick, I wonder if there's going to be like an aftermarket way to hide a USB stick or maybe even like a USB hard drive, like inside the console connected to the USB so that, you know, a thief is looking and maybe they'll pick out the wrong USB stick or maybe that there is no USB stick. They can't tell because I don't know how it sounded like this Tesla thing was like a organized thing in the Bay Area. It seemed like these guys were pretty smart. And I know in Europe there was like Tesla specific robberies going on. So I wonder if this is something that they're gonna.
Oh, they're looking. They know what's. They I surely know that Sentry Mode is coming and everything.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, we could look into something that maybe carve out a space in the center console, like a fake. A fake bottom, if you will, where the USB is or something like that. That could.
I mean, they already have the wireless things. They could have like a wireless thing with like a USB thing in there as well.
Yeah,
it might be kind of interesting.
Yeah, there's definitely something to be done there. All right, Sentry Mode is rolling out. Be on the lookout for it. And if you have a good example of actually like it working or something, and some footage of thieves, like let us know. It'd be a we'd love to feature some people getting cut because of it. That'd be great. But the update is coming with other stuff too. Still related to Sentry Mode, but also with just the Tesla Dashcam feature. Tesla is also now using the side cam on on not only on Sentry Mode, but on the dash cam feature. So the instead of just the narrow camera, which gave a very narrow field of view for the Tesla cam feature, now you also have a side view in case you need it for any accident insurance claims and stuff like that. Also, dog mode is there. Dog mode is basically cabin over heat protect, which was already a feature in all Tesla vehicles. It's just that now, if you activate dog mode, you activate cabin over heat protection with also a new screen. So the center display, the screen shows that it writes something like, "My owner will be back soon. Don't worry, the heater is on and it's 70 degree or the climate control is on or whatever." So it prevents people from freaking out that someone left their dog in the car. But for that, they actually need to be looking at the screen, though. So it's not.
I wonder if some people will do this with their kids.
Yeah, leave the kids in the car.
With dog mode on.
Yeah, you shouldn't leave your kids in a car.
Obviously.
Even if the...
But sometimes, there's a thing that you have to do that, I don't know.
Yeah.
You obviously should not do it, but like if you're going to leave your kids in the car, at least put on...
Depends on the age, too, of the other kids and right. Everything, but...
16-year-old.
And on the screens of the car, it shows like the animation of a dog, though. So if you want to use dog mode for your kids, be aware that it's not a complete solution, even if you're okay with the stigma around it. But it's basically cabin memory protection, so it's gonna keep the AC running or the heater running while the keys not in the car, the driver's not in the car. But that's pretty much it.
Could this be used for camping mode as well?
Apparently, camping mode is going to be a different mode separately. That's going to you don't want the screen on while you're in camping mode.
True.
You just want everything shut down, except for climate control. So there's going to be another mode, especially for that. That's coming. Elon said that the priority was on the Sentry mode, so they fell behind a little bit of the other modes that were promised in the past few months. With those updates, also this week, Tesla is rolling out blind spot warning chime. So even if you're not on autopilot, now if you are about to run over someone on a blind spot, that is going to be a sound of it that's going to be the car.
That's actually good because our idiot Siberian Husky keeps running behind our car, and it's nice if we're backing up, we can see it. But sometimes it kind of comes in below the camera, so that it'll be nice to have another kind of warning system that she's doing stupid stuff.
Yeah, I'm not sure it's going to work for a dog, though.
Sure, why not? Like,
yeah, because normally that's more like for highway speed and whatnot, but maybe. Well, it's a big dog. So. With that, also, you have auto-folding mirrors based on location. So that's you can fold your mirrors, but now you can do it automatically based on your location. So if someone, for example, has a very tight garage, then they can set in the system that as soon as you arrive at that destination, the mirror folds so that you can park the car without having to activate anything, which is nice. So not as useful for everyone, but a few people are going to welcome that feature for sure. All right, now moving on to Model 3 in Europe. So last week we reported on the rollout starting with the first ship arriving in Belgium at the port of Zeebrugge. And there was some difficulties at first with the deliveries. Elon Musk ended up going himself. A bunch of people were invited to take delivery like the next day that the ship arrived. And a lot of them were like turned back at the delivery center saying that, we have some delay, we can't even get the car. So there was some difficulty there for sure. And now, just a week later, apparently, based on a news report coming out of Belgium, Tesla ended their contract, or at least they changed the contract with the company in charge of the port so that they don't handle the preparation for the Model 3s anymore. They still work with them to unload the cars from the ships, but they were also in charge of like charging them and preparing them for delivery and everything so that Tesla has a quicker turnaround from the ship to the customers. Which is something that Elon Musk has been pushing a lot in the past few months, just the turnaround time from the factory to the customer. And that also applies to vehicles going through Europe. But apparently there was they weren't satisfied with the situation with Hyco, the company is called. And that company hired 100 workers, especially for that, especially to handle the volume of the Model 3 coming through Europe. And now apparently they were all let go because Tesla's going to handle that themselves.
That's interesting. I wonder if they just, I mean, Tesla's got to get those people to do that somewhere. I imagine there's quite a few people in their delivery centers, but maybe they can hire some of those ICO workers as well. The state of, like, I always, like, I lived in Europe for 2 years in Paris, and it was always surprising how how often everybody was going on strike. I wonder if that's because the unions are much stronger in Europe, and, you know, Tesla and Elon are kind of anti-union. I wonder if that's one of those things where he's just like, you know what? Nope, nope, nope. We're just going to do it ourselves. So
what you're referencing right now is that there was a nationwide strike day in Belgium.
Yeah.
And so that wasn't directly related to Tesla at all. It's just a national strike day. But apparently it did affect some deliveries because some port workers were part of that strike. And therefore, just for one day, like a few deliveries got delayed. That happened at the same time that the whole situation got sorted with between Tesla and Hyco. So the media are inferring that it's part of it, but we don't know for sure. Makes sense, though.
Yep.
Makes a lot of sense. So, yeah, this weekend, the first ship, though, is going to arrive in Norway also. So Norway is going to have their first large shipment of Model 3s. So look out for that. A bunch more ships are coming to Europe, and the first ship are also hitting China. So Model 3s are going to be all over the world by the end of next week. And of course, the volume is now picking up and everything. And you can expect a bunch of things like that to happen because, like, the rollout in the US and North America in general wasn't perfect either. We expect for sure that Tesla have learned some from their mistake in the North America. It's going to be a little bit smoother in Europe. But I have to think there's going to be some issues too because they're just, those markets were pretty good for Tesla, but the Model 3 is going to explode. No matter that, they're going to overwhelm the level of volume is completely different. So it's going to be a learning curve for Tesla's employees there too. But they're going to do it. They did it in North America. There's no reason for them not to do it in Europe and China.
Yep.
All right. Now on the autopilot or self-driving front for Tesla, the DMV released all the disengagement reports of the people testing autonomous driving system in California on public roads in California, and that includes the Tesla because Tesla has some permits to test autonomous mileage in California. Yet for 3 years in a row now, Tesla is reporting no disengagement. Zero disengagement. Why? Because they're not reporting any mileage in the States. So Tesla is not testing fully autonomous system on roads in California.
Do you believe that?
I mean, I do believe what Tesla wrote in the letter, which is clearly written by a lawyer,
right.
which says that Tesla did not test any vehicle on public roads in California in autonomous mode or operate any autonomous vehicle as defined by California law.
Right.
So I think that's probably the most important thing here. But in general, I believe Tesla is not really testing that because the only thing that they reported in terms of autonomous mileage in California was back in 2016. And you can trace all the mileage, which I think was like 500 miles or something, to mileage done to make the demo that they released back then. You know, they released when they released the Autopilot 2.0, they released a demo of self-driving. All the mileage they did was just to film that demo. And now 2 years, 3 years later, there is still nothing.
So is it possible that they're driving around in autonomous mode? Sorry, with like an autopilot? So like level 2? And I mean, is there some way that they can be driving around legally, but not reporting anything?
for me, I'm having a hard time getting to understand the situation here, because my understanding, if you compare what Waymo is doing with what others are doing there, it's not because a bunch of people are saying, well, they have a test engineer on board, so it doesn't count. No, if you have a test engineer, you're testing a fully autonomous system, it still counts. You have to report it. And Tesla, Elon Musk was talking about, oh, we are very good now at handling traffic lights and even stops and everything. That's a full self-driving system. If you're trying to handle like traffic lights and everything, he says like they have a 98% success rate.
You think they're testing like in Nevada or something?
So that's a big question, right? It makes no sense. They should be testing it in California. That's right. California is their home. That's where they have most cars. And then the other thing that I mentioned, which is kind of weird, is that, and I'm quoting here, the full self-driving program. So if something would count into the autonomous mileage testing, would be a full self-driving program, right? And that's what Tesla calls the program that they're running with the employees, where they are giving them the new hardware 3 computer, and they are giving the full self-driving package for free in on employee vehicles if they give them some feedback on it. And that was back in October. They said they had a few hundreds already, but they wanted a few hundred more on the program. I cannot believe that some people in the program are not in California. That makes no sense. But others are saying that even though that thing was happening since October, it's still not in place. Like, they just sold car under the program, so they sold a bunch of cars with the discounts and everything. But they don't have any full self-driving package yet inside as a test program. Which, okay, that's fair. So then that's going to mean that in 2019 they're going to be on it, and we're going to see some autonomous mileage from Tesla. But I mean, Elon Musk has been saying that by the end of the year, Tesla's full self-driving system is going to be safer than humans. He said that. He didn't say that it's going to be released to customer, because that's dependent on regulatory approval and everything. But if by the end of the year they are aiming to be safer than human, to have a self-driving system similar to human, and they are not even testing it in California right now, I'm all but skeptical about the whole situation.
Yep. And then 2 years ago in April, Elon said 2 years full self-driving.
Yeah.
So there's a couple promises probably broken along the way for self-driving. But,
yeah. You know. I still think that's the problem with it, like with trying to determine when self-driving is going to happen, is that because the way Tesla is doing it, which is just computer vision based, and they are relying on just improving computer vision, basically. And that's basically AI.
Right.
And AI can happen really fast. You figure it out, and then it's figured out. Like, it's going to work. So, it could happen, but I wouldn't hold my breath or anything. And they still have like the best test fleet in general, if you consider that all the data they're getting. No one is getting more real world data than Tesla, so that's definitely their big advantage. But what are they doing with that data? We don't know for sure. It's difficult to tell. We know what they're pulling, but we don't know that much what they're doing with it. We'd love Tesla to be more open about that. I know there's some like high P situation that they have to handle when they are releasing information, but I look what others have been doing, like Cruise, like Waymo, and I feel that they are being more open about this stuff than Tesla. I'd like them to do the same on that front. Sorry. But yeah, you can read the full letter on the Electrek, but there's not much there. So they do say that they're testing on public roads in other part of the world, which, so there's that. All right. Something that we reported last weekend that I thought was interesting, and it's based on a report from Manager Magazine in Germany. It's sort of a deep dive into the situation at Audi. It includes some very interesting comments about their current electric vehicle programs, and also the impact on the Tesla Model 3s on those programs. First of all, on the a little more worrying side of things, they describe a state of the e-tron program that's kind of worrying. I mean, they say that the program cost them 2 billion euros just for the development of it. And they have a break-even point at 600,000 units. And the whole report is based on like them having an interview with executives and insider sources and everything. So it's not like all 100% information, but still.
Why is that worrying to you?
Because the e-tron has a very limited time on the market. I mean, the Volkswagen Group now is betting everything on the MEB program. The e-tron is not based on the MEB.
Right.
Then for the performance side of things, there's two big vehicle platforms that Audi is betting on right now. That's the MEB that they can use. First car is going to come 2020. We're going to talk about it soon too. And the PPE, which is the one that they're developing with Porsche for probably for their more high-end side of the vehicles. So Audis can use the MEB for the lower-end side and PPE for the higher-end side. The e-tron was sort of an in-between. The MEB wasn't ready. The PPE wasn't ready, so they're doing the e-tron. But it's still like it's still a pretty good vehicle. And they're going to do the e-tron Sportsback too, but there's just going to be two cars there. There's going to be the e-tron SUV, the e-tron Sportsback. I think like the GT is going to be based on the Taycan, so that's not it. And pretty, I think the GT is going to be the only sedan that they were doing. Maybe they're going to be another sedan, cheaper one on the e-tron. I'm not sure, but I wouldn't bet on that. So it's just those two, and it's basically just one car because the Sportback is just an SUV e-tron with a Sportsback. So it's that one car. 600,000 units. Do you think you're going to sell 600,000 e-tron SUV within the next, 10 years or something? That's 60,000 units per year? Yeah, I don't think they sell 60,000 units per year of the e-tron.
That's quite a bit.
Yeah. And like by 2021, they're going to have an e-tron based on the MEB. They're going to have an e-tron based on the PPE. So I don't know. I was surprised by that. Then the program goes into the development of the PPE, which is going to be an important platform for both Audi and Porsche. And they say that they were developing it because that's already a three-year-old program or something, and they plan to release it in 2020, 2021, something like that. But they say that they had to go back and redo the platform based on a cost basis. So they look at the cost and it came about the platform itself, 3,000 euros too high. It's something that the Porsche was okay with. They were like, we can sell for 3,000 more to our customers. But for Audi was like, it's a little bit tougher for us, a tougher pill to swallow for us. So they had to redo the program and arrive cheaper. And they said that that's when the Tesla Model 3 came to market. So they broke down the cost of the Tesla Model 3. And they're like, hey, something going on. Tesla was able to do it for much cheaper than us. So we need to be, we cannot have a vehicle platform coming out in 2020 that is more expensive by 3,000 euros than a platform that Tesla released back in 2000. Well, you can say 18 or 17 based on the really like 17. It's a tougher sell for me based on the volume that they have.
I think on a larger note, I think a lot of the traditional auto companies are having trouble getting down to Tesla's price points. Without the EV incentives, we know about Chevrolet and the Bolt. They're never making money on that. They expect to break even on EVs in like the early 2000s. We know that Kia and Hyundai are making very limited amounts of their Niro and Ioniq before that, and even the Soul EV I don't think is going to be in huge numbers.
It's not right now. So unless they change something, but right now it's definitely not.
Right. So it seems to me that all the traditional automakers that are making EVs aren't able to get to Tesla's price points without losing money or subsidizing or whatever. So, you know, all these people who are like, and this is a very common theme with like the shorts and the people who kind of betted against Tesla, is like, well, the traditional automakers are coming in and they're just going to destroy Tesla. But, you know, my feeling, especially covering this industry so closely over the last 5 years, is that Tesla's been like, they haven't just gotten lucky and they just didn't make a decision that other people decided not to make. They've been learning a lot over this time, and like Elon's decision or whoever's decision to do the Gigafactory was key. Like the fact that they're getting their batteries cheaper than anybody else and they don't have to go on the commodities market and let LG or Samsung or whoever decide the price is key. You know, it also extends to like none of the other automakers are putting any money into or directly into charging infrastructure. And Tesla's got like by far the best charging infrastructure. When you're buying an electric vehicle, having that charging infrastructure is huge, even though you may only use it once a month or so. So I see all these automakers coming in, making all the same mistakes Tesla made, not making mistakes, but addressing the problems for EVs that Tesla addressed 5 years ago, getting batteries at a cheap enough price, infrastructure, and also the efficiency. You know, the original Model S wasn't quite as efficient as the Model 3 is, you know, incredibly efficient. So like all these things coming together, I don't think the traditional automakers are going to catch up. Like we already know that the I-PACE is relatively inefficient compared to Tesla's and even to, you know, Hyundai, I guess. But, you know, Audi as well. They don't quite have the same range for the battery pack, although Audi, I think, doesn't let you charge the batteries all the way. So all these things come together to kind of show me that Tesla's not in any immediate peril once the traditional automakers kind of ramp up their electric vehicles.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good point. I mean, the other argument, though, is like they have so much money that they can just... They can catch up with that instead of...
Well, that's what they're doing right now. I mean, GM is losing money for, you know, the first 4 or 5 years, and it looks like Audi or Volkswagen Group is also planning to lose quite a bit of money just to get up to, you know, where Tesla's at or, you know, up to speed on EVs.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's still some side that some people that I think can catch up, and Volkswagen might be one of them. We just need to see that MEB platform. Like, they've been hyping that thing up for a long time, and let's see how efficient can it be. Like in terms of both cost and just energy efficiency as a whole. If it works, it works. We don't know until they release an actual vehicle on it, which apparently is by the end of this year. So
yeah, that's the other thing with the Volkswagen Group is they're very PR drip heavy, yeah. and you know, if you go to any Volkswagen, Audi, Porsche dealer right now, there's like one, you know, e-Golf on the lot. So once they start producing cars, we'll be able to take them more seriously.
Yeah. But still in the Volkswagen news, Porsche, even though it's not the PPE, it's coming that next year or the year after that, they still have the Taycan, still have the hype over the Taycan. Could be a great car, I think. And they are getting closer and closer to production. We've seen this week a bunch of prototypes boats, both in Italy and in Norway. A bunch of people sent us pictures of it. We saw the picture of the charge port working. It's sort of an automatic sliding doors that goes up, which is pretty cool. You can check out on that track. Not as cool as the one on the actual concept of the Mission E, which was like the whole fenders was popping out of the side of the car and moving aside, which was completely hiding the charge part. You couldn't see the charge part. It was really behind the whole body part. But this one is cool too. what else you see? You see the front, but looks small, and there's still some equipment in there. Not clear if the equipment is needed, if it's for the test or if it's part of the car. It looks like it's significantly smaller than what you'd find in the Model S, but not by that much.
Not I-PACE small, though.
No, I-PACE is, you cannot even call that a front.
It's like a glove box on the front.
A file folder and a file holder and a under the hood or something.
Yeah, you could.
Then there was the sighting in Norway, which was cool too, because they were doing some winter testing there. Looks like they were pushing the cars too, because one of them was banged up. Like there was a part of the body, the bumper in the back was just falling off. So I think that was a good sign if they were really pushing it to the limit where they actually lose control and everything. So that's good. You also see, so all those cars are still very heavily camouflaged. It's not what you're going to get. I mean, you can see that some body part are just not there. That includes the wheels. They always have some cover wheels on. For some reason, one of the car didn't have it on the front wheel, and you can see the full disc brake and the caliper on it. It's a huge caliper, very big performance brake, perfect for the track, which is something that Porsche has been pushing a lot, that the Taycan's going to be a good track car.
But the irony is, like, you'll probably almost never use it because of regen.
If you're pushing hard on the track, you should use your brake for sure. Regen is great, but the mechanical brakes are still going to be going to see some usage. Some great pictures there. That's thanks to takenforum.com. Oh, you see the door handles too, which look like crazy thin. I'm sure it's solid, but it looks like it would break in my hand or something. Rivian, we had some news about Rivian this week. Earlier this week, there was a rumor starting out that GM and Amazon was interested in the electric pickup startup. But today, the startup actually confirmed that, yes, there was a round investment that was happening, a $700 million round investment, but only Amazon. Amazon was a part of the, what actually led the round, but GM is not mentioned at all. So
I wonder why that is. I wonder if GM's not investing, or they're just investing such a small amount that it's not worth headlining it. Or
if it was a small amount, I think it would have been included, because all they say is Amazon led the round and existing investor participant in the round. So I think it's just Amazon and existing investor, not GM. GM might have been that rumor was coming out from Reuters. They might have colluded, confused information with maybe they're talking to GM for some kind of partnership on powertrains or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, because the current prototypes were built on Ford chassis, right?
Yeah, they have some test mules with Ford, correct.
So that's kind of interesting.
But that's just like any startup is going to do that. They're going to start from a pickup truck and just start replacing parts. And so the design team work on their side. And then you want to test out some powertrain stuff on a pickup. So I wouldn't read too much into that.
Well, it's certainly a big deal because, you know, obviously Amazon's got deep pockets. If they're on board, it's a good sign for Rivian. $700 million isn't enough to get a car off the line, but it's certainly, you know, where it's coming from is almost as important as the amount of money. Clearly Amazon has incredibly deep pockets, and you know they obviously have the retail footprint, not retail footprint, but they have the users, and they could sell cars directly if they wanted to or whatever.
Yeah, they've been making some move in that. Like, that looks like they might eventually sell cars on their platform. So.
Yep.
You think Rivian could be the first one, maybe? Something like
maybe.
That? And you said it's not enough to bring a car to production, but I think it is for, in this case, for Rivian, because they already have so much going on. Like, they already had over half a billion, if I'm correct. So it's that $700 million is adding to that. So I don't even think that Amazon has like a majority stake in it's still a minority stake with that investment.
Right.
The company was already quite huge. They already had that former Mitsubishi plant in Illinois.
Right.
They were already investing in redesigning that plant, investing in tooling it.
So the only thing that could stop Rivian at this point is Tesla's truck or what?
I wouldn't even think they would actually stop it.
Just another option.
Yeah, it's going to be another option. Even if Tesla's truck is as good as Elon has been talking, I still think if Rivian has a place on the market. They are not releasing publicly the number of reservations they got. I'm one of them. But I'm sure they used that number to raise capital, and that probably held there. So maybe they have some decent reservation for that. All right, exciting on that front. Mm-hmm. Speaking of reservation, Mercedes-Benz says that the EQC is sold out for 2019 and, I'm quoting here, probably 2022.
All 300 of them.
Yeah, that's the only thing. It's nice saying that. And who said that, by the way, is Dieter Jetsche, the Daimler CEO, was outgoing. You know, yeah. I think it was like his last earnings call or something, and he said that. And he said that, but he said, hey, we're doing everything to achieve the maximum capacity. Well, what's that capacity? What makes you say that it's sold out for one or two years? If you're only making 10,000 then over the next year, then I'm not impressed that it's sold out. But if you're making, I don't know, 40,000, then yeah, that's something. Again, I mean, Audi just said that they have 20,000 reservations worldwide for the e-tron, which I think is pretty good. I mean, it's not that far from like Tesla numbers for the Model X back then. It's not Model 3 number, but no one was expecting that anyway. So, I really like to, because I'm sure that Mercedes' EQC program is not a compliance car program. It's a full volume vehicle program, but that could mean 50,000 cars. That could mean 200,000 cars. I mean, Mercedes, like, say, if you look at the GLC, the GLE, those cars are like several hundred thousand units per year cars. I mean, it's not the... There's, in my mind, as a EV fan, there's like no reason that the EQC is not in the same category. But realistically, I think it's not going to be. If you just look historically at what the established automakers have done for their first volume vehicle program, you look at GM with a Bolt EV, some kind of crossover compact vehicle of that size. It's not a 20,000 units per year program, but that's what they do. So,
yeah. You know, I saw my first EQC in person at CES. They had one over there. Yeah. It's not super exciting. It's kind of like, you know, you wouldn't even know it was a electric vehicle, which is a good thing in a lot of ways. They didn't try to do a weird mobile, but it's also like, you know, when you see a Model X, you know that there's something special there, where the EQC is kind of just like, you know, a typical Mercedes crossover with a blue, you know, sticker on it.
I don't think the EQC or the e-tron for that matter is a big competitor to Model X. I think Model X is like a class just above them, especially with the recent changes that Tesla made to the options on the Model X. But so I think the e-tron and the EQC themselves are going to compete more for customers. Those two cars, they're going to compete for customers. And well, I haven't driven. I've seen it in person. I've been inside and everything, but they haven't let me drive a EQC yet. So it's hard for me to call a winner or anything like that. But just based on specs and look on the car and everything, so far I'll choose an e-tron any day over an EQC. I'm still open minded. Let me try the car and I'll see for sure after that. But I mean, so far the e-tron is killing it. I think versus the EQC.
Yeah, and the EQC is not going to have it's not going to have Porsche speed, obviously. But I don't even think it's like, I think it's more like an I-Pace in terms of charging rate and.
Yeah, like, they're only talking about 100 kilowatts, I think, in CCS, and we've seen the e-tron do 155. So
yeah, and 150, and the e-tron does 155 all the way up to like 80% or something.
Yeah,
crazy.
Yeah, that's great. Speaking of the e-tron. Audi's going to unveil the Q4 e-tron, so a smaller, compact SUV-type vehicle.
And it's not going to look like that.
What they unveil today is design sketches. So they unveil like the rough design of the car. And of course, when they do a design sketches, they have oversized wheel and they have very small windows and things like that. Yeah, for sure it's not going to be that.
But if it even looks a little bit like that, or even if it just looks like a small e-tron, or a small...
You're closer to that. I mean, if you put money on something, put money on a smaller e-tron, like a Q4 size e-tron.
Which is still a pretty nice car, I think.
Yeah, for sure. And that market is huge. We all know that the market is huge. So, and so now it's design sketches that they unveil. You can see that on Electrek. Next month at Geneva Motor Show, they're going to unveil the actual concept. And the production car is going to come in late 2020, early 2021. Sorry. So looking forward to that, because looking forward to the price point, really. I want to see a price point for that. We just talked about the Audi Mercedes competition. I mean, Mercedes already announced that they're going to follow it with a smaller version of the EQC all electric. Tesla has the Model Y coming. All those cars should probably compete in the same segment, I think.
You think Subaru is in trouble? I mean, you know, they have that like Toyota based crossover. I can't remember. It's like the E whatever, but you know, they have no EV plans at all, really. But
I think they do. They do in 2021 or something.
Okay, but their base is like really usually like pretty green folks. I know a few Subaru drivers around town, and they're kind of bummed that they can't get an electric version. And then you have all these like crossovers coming down the pike that will be all-wheel drive. This one in particular looks like kind of a Subaru killer-ish thing. And the Model Y in particular, if that's all-wheel drive, I kind of feel like the Subaru is going to be in big trouble.
Subaru is weird, man, because Subaru just kills it in a few markets. Like, there are a few markets that they just own. You go to Colorado, and it's, yeah, like Subaru's everywhere. So, and that's credit to just, like, their four-wheel traction system is just very good. It's very good for a gas-powered car.
Exactly.
then you break a dual-motor electric vehicle, and it's going to kill it any time. So, yeah, Subaru is in trouble if someone figures out how to go into one of those markets and just show everyone that, like, yeah, if you have a dual motor electric vehicle, there's no matter how good all wheel drive traction the Subaru is, it's not going to compete with it. But there's still a marketing issue with that. I think, like, it's so weird in the auto industry, that kind of loyalty that consumer has.
Oh yeah, definitely.
So I think Subaru is surviving on that right now. If someone find a way to break that, I think they're gone real quick if they don't have an electric option that's decent enough to compete.
Yeah, I guess they also are a little bit down market, less expensive.
Correct.
So that's an issue. But yeah, you know, like Subarus get like less than 20 miles per gallon because of the all-wheel drive. I think it's just going to be a no-brainer. Like, if you do the math on like how much you're spending to get around with the all-wheel drive, where, you know, electric doesn't lose much, if anything, by having all-wheel drive. So, if I were Subaru, I would start thinking about getting an electric vehicle out quick.
I think they are thinking about it already. It's just they're moving slowly, like most other established automaker. Speaking of established automaker, Toyota. Famously anti all electric vehicle for a while now, even though they say they have one coming next year and everything, but they are pretty obvious about that, the fact that they are more hybrid and fuel cell company than anything else, and they are only making EVs for as compliance vehicle for regulators. And I'm like, okay, man, I don't care. Just go die in a corner. Toyota slowly die like that. But they're not dying without a fight. And now their latest ads, which we've been seeing some of the ads for the past year or two, but not from Toyota directly. I've seen it from Lexus. But now apparently it worked well enough that they're bringing down market to Toyota, because Lexus is their premium brand and whatnot. They released a new Toyota Corolla 2019 advert. And to be fair, they're not just trashing all electric vehicle, but they're trashing basically every car ever made in that weird advert where you see the new Corolla passing by a bunch of, well, you look at that, there's a bunch of cars from the 90s here. Like, you can't be like, oh, we beat the car from the 90s. Like, you're 20 years too late for that. But
I think I saw Magnum PI's Ferrari.
who's sitting at home like, I need a new car? I mean, they're going to go with the 1980s Ferraris or the new Toyota Corolla. Come on. But I felt strongly about the HAD because of the way they attacked the all-electric vehicle in there. So at the very end of that HAD, after passing all those weird cars, they passed someone that was charging an electric vehicle, like left them stranded in the desert or something. Then they use their slogan now that is self-charging the car. They call the hybrids self-charging, and that just pisses me off because you're charging with what?
Gas.
What are you charging? You're charging. I mean, technically, they can, because you could sue them all you want. They have those fine prints and everything. They are back. They are. I'm sure the lawyers went over everything, and they're gonna be back. You cannot sue them for false advertising or anything, because technically you have a gas powered engine that is supplying electricity to the motor for sure, but you're still fully powered by gas in that hybrid Corolla. You're 100% gas car, so they say 100% electric range, self charging and whatnot. I mean, I cannot believe that thing works, that kind of advertising works, because in the Toyota and the Lexus ad, they're also doing things like, oh, you don't have to charge a car and wait overnight and whatever. That's a positive for EV. What are you talking about? The fact that you wake up every morning and you have a full charge, that's a positive. I mean, that self-charging is ridiculous. And they're bringing that to Toyota now. I mean, the whole thing about electric, it's the power to have it's the ability to choose where your power is coming from. And I know that right now it's not that much of a big choice, because you're reliant of your electricity provider in your area. But you have people like Seth who made the choice and was able to power his cars with solar by installing solar on his own roof. So he decided what kind of power is going into his car. You just cannot do that with gas-powered cars. You buy the car, it's either a diesel engine or a gasoline engine, and you get your fuel from gasoline. Theoretically, you could have some more green gasoline if they use, for example, green power to refine the crude oil. But who the hell is doing that? Like, who the hell is like, oh, I'm buying from Shell instead of Exxon because they use green. No one is even looking into that, because at the end of the day, you're just burning gas, right? So that's a great thing about, it's not self-charging. It's you charge it. You make the choice with what you charge it to a certain degree. I admit it. But that's what's nice about CV. That's what brought me to EVs. And the fact that they're doing that self-charging thing, because of that, it just pisses me off. All right, that was my rant of the day.
Yep.
Oh, we're ending on that. Are we ending on that? We didn't have another one.
I think that's
it. I thought for sure I didn't want to end on the that bad note. Oh, shit. I thought we had another article to talk about after that. I didn't think we were going to end on this. All right.
What was the big story of today? Like, didn't we cover something bigger today?
Yeah, that was the Testimonial 3 in Europe. We did that. No, I don't think we have much else to talk about. I mean, we should have Micah on to talk about a few EVs, that the personal EV stuff that came out this week, but even then it wasn't anything crazy. Oh, Shell bought Sonnen.
Yeah, that's kind of big. In the space. It's so two things. Like, Sonnen is kind of a competitor for Tesla's Powerwall. They're out there more. They hired a bunch of Tesla's former folks. They're doing a lot more legwork than Tesla has, because I think Tesla just doesn't have the inventory to sell, because all their batteries are going in cars. But down the road, Sonnen will be a big competitor for the Tesla Powerwall. And the question is, what is Shell doing? Like, why are they buying? They recently bought a charging network. Is that right? So it's weird.
Yeah, they're big on charging. They invested in all, and they have like high, they have part of Ionity too. Like, they have a deal with them and everything. So yeah, they're big on charging. And Sonnen is also in the charging space. They released their own charging station too.
Right. So it's questionable. Like, is Shell being like, are they investing in the future and they think the future is green and they're gonna be in all these spaces? and that's they're going to transition their oil away from that, which is what we would hope, I guess. But the other thing is, like, I always think about, you know, like, I'm not sure if you remember this, but like, a bunch of oil companies bought up a lot of battery tech, like around the time the EV1 came out, and actually I think even the Toyota Prius actually had to change their battery technology because of a bunch of patents that I think it was Texaco or something like that bought. So the oil companies play kind of weird games with this kind of stuff. So I'm a little bit skeptical of what Shell's doing and like their motives. So, you know, just keep an eye on that stuff. Like, make sure Shell doesn't like just fold Sonnen or try to sell, you know, oil generators to people who are buying batteries or whatever.
Yeah, I'm more optimistic than you on that front. I think back in the 90s, I think for sure that might have been part of the plan. But I mean, today, I think they just see the writing on the wall and they want to shift their investment into something that's going to be sustainable going forward. I really think that's what they're doing. So you can either like be mad about it because a bunch of oil investors that made a ton of money on oil is now going to make a ton of money on green, or you can just swallow the pill and say, all right, it's still more money going to renewables, so that's good too. Either way. I mean, yeah, I remember when Suncor, like Petro-Canada, when Suncor bought Petro-Canada, they also like acquired a bunch of hub wheels, electric motor patents, and apparently they tried to interfere with some hub wheels electric vehicle program. That was in the 90s too. Mm-hmm. Now Suncor is investing in charging networks all over Canada. So
yeah, Petro-Canada has got the Trans-Canada charging network going.
Yeah.
That was a story from this week. We have a few more minutes. There's a few other things. The Kia Soul 2020, which I think is a pretty hot car if they make enough, which is very up in the air, got its 243 mile EPA range, which is pretty crazy. Like, it's a nice, you know, that's a very not aerodynamic looking vehicle. So 243 mile EPA range is pretty impressive. It's more than the Kia Niro. Is that right? I always get the Niro and the...
Yeah, Niro is like the 238. Oh, no, they haven't even confirmed the EPA, right? Did they? Yeah, I don't know. They have the EPA.
Yeah, so Kia Soul, like a nice four-seater, kind of an SUV with a short back, little boxy car. Very popular. I don't know, like in Florida, I feel like...
You mean the non-EV version is popular?
Yeah, the non-EV version is quite popular in places like Florida, I guess. It's just kind of like a fun beach car or whatever. So, like, this seems like it's going to be a pretty compelling vehicle. But again, like every other very compelling vehicle from Korea, it seems like they're not going to make enough of these to make a difference.
Yeah, it's still very much a compliance car. They limit the allocation per market. Even though it's not, they sell it outside of compliance market, they limit the allocation so much. It's fun to have as an additional option, but it's not making a big difference on the overall market.
Right. And this one's not coming out until the end of this year or beginning of next year, something.
Yeah, it's a 2020. It's a 2020 car, so it's going to be the end of 2019.
So, yeah, it's not even going to be on the streets until the end of the year.
Yeah. It's a weird timing on that one.
Yeah. And then the other kind of neat thing, GM is releasing their EV bikes, I guess, just bikes, foldable electric bikes. It's interesting because Ford's also building electric bikes. It'll be interesting to see how these automakers get into the bike space because I think it is a pretty cool market. I'm actually a huge fan of this stuff, but, you know, I don't know if these guys have the patience and the... you know, just like the focus on bikes that these other, you know, hardcore bike companies have had for years and years.
Yeah, it's a foldable one too, so you could technically throw it in the back of your EV.
It could be part of your...
You do your last mile with that.
Right, like it's like a life raft on a boat or something, you know?
Yeah, well, I'm living in Venice now, and it's insane the amount of, like, with Jump, like Uber's electric bike, thing, and then all the, I don't know, eight different electric scooters company that's around here. I mean, there's personal EVs everywhere around me. Like within 5 minutes of walking distance, I can literally get to, I don't know, 30, wow. 40 different e-bike or electric vehicles. I mean, I don't have a car right now, so that's all I'm doing. And there's, I can get anywhere around here with those.
So awesome. you're on Bird and you're on Lime, I'm assuming. Any others?
I'm all of them. I mean, with Uber and Lyft too, they have a ton. So I open all the apps at the same time and I'll look which one is closer and then just I take the closer because they are all the same price anyway.
Right.
So it doesn't change anything. But like I didn't use the Uber one until yesterday. And since it was the first time using it, it was like for free all day. So I just used those all day.
Nice.
And they it looks like they are all the different patterns of where they are. Like they are more like the clusters of them that are closer from one company. So like if I go to my Muay Thai class, it's like a Uber territory going there. But then when you're there, it's more of a Lyft territory. So I can take a Uber going to get a Lyft going back. And
yeah,
it's great because like it's 3 miles away. So it's a little bit long to walk there. But you go with an electric scooter and it's like not even 10 minutes. And it costs you like $2 or something. So. All right. That's pretty much it for us this week, guys. Thanks a lot for listening. Thanks a lot for watching on YouTube. You can hit the subscribe button to see our next episode or our next videos. And you can subscribe on your podcast app and leave us a review there. That helps a lot, too. And if you have any question, you can send us an email or a tweet or whatnot. And we're going to be here same time, same place next week. Ciao.